Okay, good afternoon, and welcome to this session, The Cloud, Navigating the Benefits and Challenges of This Disruptive Innovation. My name is Dan Holm, and I'd like to welcome you to SharePoint Conference 2014. I know we're quite a ways into the event right now, but it's very exciting for me to be part of this event, partly because I was honored to be able to help craft this particular track and to create content that really tries to address the questions and concerns and challenges faced by particularly the business leadership and platform owner group within organizations. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Dan Holm. I've been an MVP and SharePoint server for about 7 years. Just recently was recognized as an MVP in Office 365. But I've been doing IT for about 20 years in the Microsoft technology space and have worked with most Fortune 500 organizations at this point and a good part of the Global 5000. I live in Maui, Hawaii, so I'm very lucky to call Maui home a couple of days a month when I'm not traveling the globe to meet with customers. And one of the customers that I do spend, had just came back from, in fact, is NBC Universal, for whom I was the Microsoft Technologies consultant for the broadcast of the Olympic Games. So I spent about 6 weeks in Russia, came back home for 3 days last week, did my laundry, and came to the SharePoint conference, where, as I mentioned, I am actually working on the team for the executive track. So I hope not only that you enjoy this session, but that you have a great experience here at the executive track of SharePoint conference altogether. I'm also an author and writer and analyst. I've written some books for Microsoft Press, and we are just going to be launching later this month a new community aimed at not only business leadership, but also IT pros, developers, and end users called IT Unity. And you'll be hearing more about that as the week progresses and when we go live later this month. My real area of expertise and the time I spend most with customers is at the decision-making level. I spend a lot of time in the executive suite helping organizations understand how they can align their business strategies with technology. And I hope in this session, I can bring some of the discussions that I have with customers to you and help you understand what kinds of challenges organizations around the world are tackling, how they're approaching those solutions, and what paths they found to success in this very transformative, turbulent time in technology. So that's the goal of this session. We're going to, in the course of this session, provide some analysis of what exactly this point in time in technology and business really is. I'll provide some guidance. We'll have plenty of time for discussion and Q&A, particularly after the session, since this is the last session of the day. And I guarantee you we will also have lots of text in boxes, since that's a very popular thing to do these days. So let's dive in, starting with some analysis. The title of this session is The Cloud, which obviously is a mega trend today. And one of the first things that we have to be able to do as leadership and organization in an organization is to be able to illuminate megatrends, to identify them and understand the impact they have on our organization and on our teams so that we can chart good strategies into the future. And today's discussion is about the cloud. So let's start by asking ourselves, why does the cloud matter? And this is a variation on a message that I give to all of my audiences, but it really is quite important, and that is that the cloud doesn't matter. And in fact, Office 365 doesn't matter, and SharePoint doesn't matter, and in all reality, IT doesn't matter. Business matters. Business is trying to get things done, to attain value, to reach customers, to succeed, to deliver value to owners and shareholders, and business really matters. And business has strategy to achieve its goals, and from that strategy come objectives that either increase value or decrease risk. And IT matters when it can be part of that story, when IT can increase value or decrease risk. Now, many of you will have heard me say this kind of thing before, but that is a fundamental reality that we need to start with, is an understanding that we need to be part of the business and that's one of the major challenges we face with the emergence of the cloud, because the cloud is, in fact, a very disruptive technology. And as I look at my customer base and what they've experienced over the past 20 years, it's been a very interesting lesson in history. If you think about the constituents in this story that we're telling this week at the SharePoint conference, we've got business trying to get things done, IT trying to manage and control the distribution of information, and this new thing called the cloud, this new disruptive force. And as we look at this from the dimensions of service, cost, and control over the past 20 years, there's been a very interesting history that leads us to understand just how disruptive the cloud is. There's been IT and business for decades now. Business was trying to get things done. IT provided the service. And IT built out an infrastructure that guaranteed the service, that provided control, but that cost money, right? And that dynamic existed. And then over the past 20 years, we've seen different phases of what we would call outsourcing, where all of a sudden there was another option for delivery of the service, and perhaps to reduce the cost by outsourcing. But what businesses often found is that when the service was outsourced, the organization lost the ability to really guarantee that it was aligning with the business. IT was always in the middle, providing control and managing cost, but the typical ebb and flow of IT was that once something was outsourced, the business realized that the outsource option didn't deliver the responsiveness and the value it needed, and so we went back into insourcing. And things went back and forth and back and forth in that dynamic. And over the course of the 20 years, as that dynamic has happened, IT's built out more and more infrastructure, delivered more and more service, cost more and more money, and that started to create a gap between IT and the business, to the point where the business starts seeing IT as being slow and unresponsive. I've had business customers tell me flat out that they see IT as an adversary, not an emissary. That's highly problematic, and that's not the role that IT needs to be playing. In addition, the infrastructure that IT has built over time is extraordinarily complex and expensive to deliver everything that the business asked it to deliver. And that expensive and complicated infrastructure changed the nature of the role of the chief information officer. In one of the very biggest companies in the world, I had the SharePoint owner tell me flat out, our CIO is a chief infrastructure officer. In other words, had lost not necessarily the skill set, but the time to really manage what really matters, which is the information and the service. And that's certainly highly painful as well. So we've gotten into this dynamic where IT has become at least perceived as slow, unresponsive, expensive, and all of a sudden there's this shiny new thing called the cloud, where when you have a problem, there's an app for that, and you can go and get the solution. And the cloud has the ability to deliver the service responsively. A business customer can go and enter their email address and suddenly have a new solution that they've required. And it has the potential to reduce cost as well. And the challenge we face is that the business sees this shiny new thing that can deliver the service at a lower cost. And again, they've told me flat out, we're the ones with the budget. If IT can't deliver, we'll go around them. And that is the reality in many organizations and in many workloads. And I don't think that's healthy for anyone. Because as the business goes to the cloud, they start procuring services that they don't necessarily understand the technology behind. They don't understand the impact of. The business starts losing track of information as it gets distributed onto multiple services that sometimes the business doesn't even know it's using. I was in a healthcare organization where they didn't even realize until halfway through the engagement that the CEO was using Dropbox for certain communications with constituents that really didn't belong there at all. So at every level, the business is going around IT. And where does that leave IT? Well, I think from a sort of an analysis perspective, the danger is that IT is really dead. And I say that to sort of be a little bit disruptive in my statement, but I really truly believe that information technology, as we believe it, is dead. And what we need to become is innovation technology. IT needs to take stock in the reality of this world and what's happening and transform itself into innovation technology. A center of excellence. Many large consulting firms, for example, are now implementing center of excellence projects. That's another way to look at it, where IT is in the middle of the conversation about how the business solves its problems with technology. IT is there to understand what the business needs and to help the business understand what its options are for how to deliver that service. The technical issues, the information management and control issues, the service management issues, the costs, the benefits, the risks and the rewards, and then to assemble a portfolio of services, some of which will be in public cloud, some of which might be in private cloud, but that together give IT the ability to align the business's needs with the technical options at its disposal. And this is truly not a loss of IT jobs, per se. This is a transformation of IT that's happening right now that needs to happen in order for us to survive. IT needs to be focused on how it can deliver service, manage cost, and maintain control. So as we are sitting in leadership positions, we need to make sure that we illuminate these megatrends to the rest of our organization, that they understand just what is happening and what the risk is if IT doesn't get transformed. And I'm not saying that it's easy, but I am saying it's possible. And I've seen organizations make this transformation. In fact, one of my customers literally rebranded IT as innovation technology. And job satisfaction went through the roof. And IT suddenly started getting a seat at the table in discussions that it never had a seat at before. And the business started appreciating IT and going to IT with new needs and new challenges. And IT then became a value provider rather than a cost center. And that really transformed the business perception of IT as well. So from an overview perspective, that's why the cloud is disruptive. It's unlike the days when we outsourced and IT was in the middle, deciding is it working, how much is it costing, maintaining control. Now the business has the ability to go around IT. And it's up to IT and the business to figure out how to correct the course of that dynamic. Otherwise, IT will be dead, and that's not healthy for IT, obviously, but it's also really not healthy for the business. IT needs to be there with the skill set and the understanding of technology. It just needs to transform its role in the organization. Now, how do you actually do that? Let me share with you a little bit of the guidance I spend time with customers at, and we're going to try to boil down about a two-day discussion into a few minutes here. But how do you do IT excellently? What can you do to establish a framework that has the right pieces? And the framework I'm going to share with you today is really based on four components that I see at various levels of weakness in different customers. These are things that if they aren't really strong, you will feel pain from. The first is the ability to define your business problems, to analyze the business. The second is to understand what's feasible. The third, to architect a solution that meets the business needs. And the fourth, to manage a portfolio of multiple services and solutions over time. And together, these create a framework of innovation management, operations management, and project management. We're going to put all these in place here. And this framework is going to allow your organization to ask the tough questions. And these are the questions we're going to create a framework to enforce. What are we doing? How do we do it? What should we do? Why did we do it? Did we do it? And what have we done? And we'll see what that means. So we'll start with the first element of the framework, which is being able to really define your business need. I'm a consultant, and one of the things that guarantees me job security is that most customers don't really understand what they're trying to do in the first place. And many of you are smiling, you laugh because you've seen that in your own organizations, but it really is true. And honestly, I find, as a consultant, the best way to help a business define its business need is to ask really simple questions. And so I'm going to share with you the questions that I really center all discussions around. The first is, what are we trying to achieve? And that, of course, drives the business to think about the outcomes. And the reason I like the word achieve is we're not saying, how will we do it? We're saying, what is the end state? We're not even talking about technology at this point. We're just saying, what's the business goal? What are we trying to achieve? And that takes us into this definition. And for those of you who were in my last session, you saw my definition of a workload. I use the term workload differently than some others do. To me, a workload is something that increases value or decreases risk in a business. It is the technical implementation of a business objective. So when I say workload, I'm saying something that you might call a solution, a service, an application, a business outcome, a business need. It's just what you're trying to do. And a workload can be really big, like enterprise social, enterprise search. It can be really granular, like creating a solution so that we can prepare for the board meetings next month. Whatever it is, the term workload to me is simply, what are we trying to do? So we have to look at that and then decide, why does it matter? That's the second question. And that very open-ended question and simply worded question drives to a discussion of the business value. What do we get out of those outcomes? And very importantly, to whom does it matter? It often is overlooked to think about who is impacted by the discussion you're having for a business outcome. And this really drives to the political weight of the challenge you're trying to face. And I think we all understand that in some situations, technology will move fastest when there is an outcome that isn't necessarily high value, but has high political value. So I would say in probably 10 to 15% of my customer base, the thing that moved forward to SharePoint from whatever they were on before was something that affected the executive suite. It was board meetings and things like that. that created the understanding of the value of collaboration. Not high value to the business as a whole, but high political value. Finance and legal often fall into that category as well. When those workloads come up, they have high political value. So to whom does it matter? And how will we know it worked? In the very beginning of the discussion of outcomes, you have to know what is the finish line and how will you know that you've actually succeeded. So those are the four questions I like to focus on when we think about defining business need. And this really gets us to the questions, what are we doing and how are we doing it? How do we do it? We need to understand what our business is trying to achieve and how we do it, if we do it currently or how we want to do it if we're going that direction. Now, the second component of this framework is a checkpoint where you determine feasibility. In other words, you ask, should we do this? This starts with, again, reminding yourself what the business need is from a benefit perspective. What is the benefit of this outcome? It's not quite the same as value or political weight. It's kind of those two things put together. But you just stop and remind yourself what the business need is. And then you have to ask yourself, can it be delivered today? Is it suitable for the business? Now, this is a question I've seen very interesting recently, which is a lot of organizations have SharePoint. Very few organizations really understand what SharePoint can do. They don't understand the full scope of its capabilities. So I can't tell you how many organizations I've been in that have SharePoint, and then when they need to do an employee survey, they go use SurveyMonkey because they don't realize that SharePoint does surveys out of the box. Or they want to create a form, and so they go out and get Adobe Forms when in all reality, a SharePoint list was perfectly good, and you click new item, you've got a form. And if you really want to make it look pretty, you pretty it up with InfoPath. Those really simple things of people just going off and saying, oh, I have a new need, and because it's new, it's clearly not something we've already got, I'm going to go find a new solution, instead of looking in their back pocket and saying, hey, we've got this amazing product, SharePoint, that can do all kinds of things for us. So it is really important to, with every workload that you're examining, to really think about, can it be delivered already? If not, what will it take to deliver? What's going to be the cost? And what could go wrong? Now, what could go wrong is not only what happens if it fails on us, and there's a risk associated with that, but also what could go wrong along the way? What opportunity costs are there? We're taking our attention away from other things. What is the risk of the journey towards a solution? So this is really going beyond the question of what are we doing and how do we do it to ask what should we do and thinking about feasibility. Now, the next piece of the framework is one of the most challenging for organizations and is one of the biggest weak spots I see in customers as they try to align their business objectives with their technical options. And that is solution specification. And I apologize for the color. It was really fine this morning when I turned in the slides and obviously not very readable right now. But solution specification. Now, some of you might call this solution architecture. There's other terms for this. I choose the term solution specification for some reasons you'll see. And what this is about aligning business needs with technical capabilities. You now are at the point where you know what you're trying to do and you've decided you should do it. You now go out and look at the technical capabilities of what you've got in your own existing portfolio and what else is out there on the market, and you have to align the two. And of course, in most cases, there's no silver bullet. There's no one thing that's going to do everything you want. And so you have to make tough decisions. And that's what this phase is really about, aligning your business needs with the capabilities of a technology, and we'll focus on SharePoint here for a moment as an example, or Office 365, and making tough decisions. So we're going to look at a process that allows you to take your business needs, understand the technical capabilities, and make tough decisions. This is what the process is going to look like. Now, I'm going to step you through this, so by the time we're done, you'll totally understand what this process is. But you'll notice we're going from yellow, which is sort of the business needs part, to the green, which is the technical capabilities, and we're having to make some tough decisions in red in the middle. And we'll use an example of a business workload from our HR organization. And let's assume that they've come to us and said, we're going to hire a lot of new employees, and we want to be able to accept resume submissions from our website from outside, and we want to then be able to look at those resumes and evaluate them to manage recruiting process. So that'll be our example here. So we've defined our business outcomes. We've looked at the value, the benefit, the cost, the risk, and we've decided we should do it. And now we have to understand what Office 365 can do for us, or what a cloud service, or what any technology can do for us. This is really technically independent. The first thing we need to do then is get some inputs from the business. That's these yellow boxes. We have to understand the business outcomes, and I've just described the scenario to you. Particularly here, we're trying to improve the productivity of the HR organization in their recruiting function. We need to understand functional preferences. Now, this is usually a small set of needs from customers, but it's things where they say, we want it to work a certain way. We want the HR director's picture to be on every page. We want the page to be green, those kinds of things. Then we have technical considerations. And technical considerations are business needs related to interoperability with other existing technologies in our portfolio. Now, let me explain that in an example. Let's say that last year, we equipped our HR organization with iPads. And now they're coming to us and saying, this new workload, we want to be able to review those resumes on iPads, offline on the train in the morning. That would be a technical consideration. And it's not the same as them coming and saying, well, we need an Office 365 tenancy with these apps and these document libraries and these content types. That's an architecture. That's later. This is really them saying, this is how we want it to work, and these are our quote-unquote requirements. And you'll notice I'm not using the word requirements anywhere on this slide, and the reason is I think that word should be banished from discussion of technology, because the word requirement alone suggests there is no room for compromise. And very rarely is there no room for compromise. Very, very rarely. Even in situations you think there's no room for compromise, there usually is, and we'll see some examples of that later. Once in a while, yes, but so we avoid that word. Now, the last thing we get from business is project constraints. And these are very, very important. How much money, time, knowledge, staff, capabilities do we have? What are our resources to achieve this project? So these are the business needs that we get from our organization. And now we're going to need to start aligning that with technical capabilities in green and making tough decisions in the middle. Now, the first step is actually really easy. This is not the tough one. This is deciding what our technology can do to support the information architecture required for this solution. So the information architecture is really about defining content. So to get there, you have to go through an exercise of classifying information. So the tough decision here is just identifying what types of information you're working with. And in this case, it's not too tough. We're working with resumes, or CVs if you call them that. That's the class of information we're working with. We have to identify that. And then we need to start looking at how we support the information architecture on the technology. And information architecture, from a purist standpoint, is about describing content. How do we describe what a resume is? It's a Word document that has certain properties or attributes or metadata. And in SharePoint, in Office 365, the technical implementation of information architecture to describe content is done with metadata and content types, columns and content types. So SharePoint has the ability to support our information architecture, and we can describe content. That content then becomes more findable. That's another piece of information architecture. And content findability in SharePoint and Office 365 includes things like the sitemap. How do users get to this content? And also search optimization. Manage properties, best bets, and those kinds of things. So the technical capability of SharePoint to support an information architecture is actually pretty strong. That makes this step pretty easy. But we do have to understand what classes of information we're working with. And in this case, again, it's resumes and CVs. Again, this step is easy. The next ones become more hard. Now, information architecture is going to facilitate information management, but it's not the same as information management. Information management is about how we actually manage the information, security, lifecycle, those kinds of things, not how we describe it, which is information architecture. Our next step, though, is going to be information management. And we're going to have to make some tough decisions about information management policies. What are the policies that we are going to implement in this workload? In order to understand the information management policies, we have to take the classes of information we've identified and align them, that's coming down from the top, align them with our information management standards that we get from the business. So the information management standards is the final piece that we need to get from the business. We know we're dealing with resumes or CVs. What are the standards with which that class of information must be managed? We need to find out, for example, that resumes contain personally identifiable information and therefore need to be highly secure. There might be situations that relate to whether that information can leave the boundaries of our country or not. There might be issues of how long we can maintain a resume, and how long we must maintain a resume. So, for example, there might be a compliance requirement that says you have to maintain a resume for 7 years after an employee leaves your organization, or 1 year after they apply and you don't hire them. And after 1 year or 7 years, you must delete that resume. Now, I'm just giving you that as an example, but that's actually pretty close to a lot of compliance requirements that say you have to keep the document for this long, it has to be a record, and then you have to delete it. And if you aren't doing those things, you are taking a risk. You're taking a risk when it comes time to certification for compliance, if you fall under certain standards. You're also taking a risk when it comes to legal action and e-discovery. And so you really need to know the standards for those classes of information. Now, in this case, information management standards are not technology specific, generally. Well, the way you manage a resume has nothing to do with SharePoint or Office 365. It should be the same if it's in a file share. It should be the same if it is a piece of paper in a filing cabinet that gets moved into a file box for 7 years and then shredded. Information management standards are standards. And we need to get those from the business for each class of information we're working with. Now, this is one of the weakest spots of this piece of our discussion, which itself is one of the weakest spots in organizations. How many of you would say you have a really strong information management standards defined in your organization? Yeah, that's a typical show of hands, less than 1%. And that is a really problematic thing. This is not Office 365 specific. It's not SharePoint specific. It's not cloud specific. We should have had these things when we had file shares. We should have had these things when we had filing cabinets. And we never did. And we know why. It's because we all have day jobs and we're fighting fires and it just never seemed important to us. But at some point, the risk needs to be recognized. And the organization needs to understand that if we don't follow the standards, these are the risks we can face. And if we don't know the standards, there's a different class of risks we can face. And I'll give you one example of a customer who is moving to SharePoint 2013 very, very, very quickly from basically a whole variety of other platforms and ways of working, email, file shares, local documents. They basically looked at their environment and said, the day someone sues us, we're going to have to settle. Because we can't do e-discovery. We have things spread across so many systems, including on local disk drives of our 5,000 employees, that we simply won't be able to do e-discovery. We're going to have to settle any suit that comes our way. That's a big risk. And that alone paid for SharePoint. One lawsuit, you got SharePoint installed, basically. And the risk becomes important. Someone has to step up and give you that information. Now, where do you get those standards? Well, depends on your organization. It usually is not going to be IT that is responsible for defining the standards, but IT has to be responsible for getting the information. It's going to often come from legal, from maybe finance, from a security or compliance organization. And if it doesn't come from anyone, I highly suggest to IT that you make it up. If you can't get the information, make up a policy. You know this class of information is kind of important. Decide how you're going to manage it. Say, okay, we're going to treat it as a record and we're keep it for 3 years. Define that and associate it with your workload, because someday you might actually find out what the standard really is. And if you know where you applied your own standards, you can then go and inject the new ones appropriately or help your organization understand what risk there is because you haven't been compliant with those standards until you discovered them. But you have to get those standards and decide what your information management policies are going to be. So information management policies include security, compliance, that's records management, and all the things related to lifecycle management. How do you get the information, how do you store it, how do you deliver it, how do you preserve it, and how do you delete it. Also, very important in this discussion is to decide what are going to be policies and what are going to be guidelines. There's a subtle difference in those words that I like to inject into my customers' discussions. Policies are decisions about how information management is going to be treated that will be enforced, one way or another. It'll be enforced with scripts, third-party tools, manual processes, rewarded or punished if they aren't followed, but really enforced. Whereas guidelines are, this is what we know should be done, and we're going to ask people to kind of do it, and then we're just going to cross our fingers and hope they actually do it. And that happens a lot in organizations. It's not always a bad thing, because sometimes the cost of enforcing the policy is greater than the risk of just using a guideline. But make sure that you know what you've chosen to do in this workload so that you understand the workload and can later describe it and perhaps modify it over time. So the second piece of the discussion here in this process is to decide what your information management policies are going to be. Then is the next tough decision to make is how your service management is going to be driven. And service management policies include things like, battery problems here, uptime. So how available does this workload need to be? We've talked about this workload of submitting resumes and doing recruiting. That might not be considered mission critical, so you might be okay with a 95 or a 99% uptime. If you're looking at Office 365, you say, what's its capability? We just heard in the keynote, they've been doing 99.98% uptime, which is extraordinary and would be ridiculously expensive to do on-premise, so that probably will be good enough for this workload. But we have to think about that. What about data protection? And that's things like content recovery, backup and restore. What about business continuity? Do we need to be thinking about what happens if our service goes down completely, either a physical service on-premise with a disaster or the loss of a cloud service? What about performance? What does the business expect as far as performance? How peppy does it need to be? That makes a difference as far as, you know, do you put it in a robust, high-performance cloud, or do you put it on something that's a little cheaper but isn't quite as high-performing? And storage. It's important to think early on with each workload, how much storage are we going to need? Now, Microsoft is already telling us that in Office 365, we're going to get to be able to use 1 terabyte site collections, which is probably enough for this workload. But you do want to model knowing your information class, which is resumes and the size of a typical resume, knowing the policy that says you're going to have to keep them for 7 years. Think about how many you're going to get and model the storage so that you understand what the life cycle of storage for this service will be. Interoperability is another pivot of this discussion. And this is where the technical considerations come into play. Our business has said they want to support this workload on their iPads, so we need to understand what the technical capabilities of the service are for supporting iPads. Now, SharePoint works very nicely on mobile devices, but if someone is opening a resume on an iPad, it's no longer necessarily in the iPad in an encrypted state. It's not managed. There's potential for data leak. So if we want to really address those concerns that are part of our information management policies, on the iPad, which is part of our service, we might need a third-party component to manage the distribution of content onto iPads. And there are some great third parties that are in exactly that space of allowing you to push and manage information out onto mobile devices. And last but not least, if I can get the service lifecycle. We're going to develop an application to deliver this workload. How are we going to actually introduce that application? How are we going to keep it up to date? How are we going to modify it over time and evolve it? A lot of discussions of governance call this application management. I like to think about it a little bit more broadly, what is the life cycle of the service itself. So all of these elements, information classification, information management policies, and service management policies, have to be considered as you align them with the technical capabilities of your service. As you look at Office 365 and say, what is the service architecture? What can we do as far as supporting our information management architecture? Now, from a service management architecture perspective, clouds generally, most clouds, are going to have higher levels of uptime than you would be able to attain at a reasonable cost on-premise. So uptime is usually going to be a good story. But what about backup and restore? If you delete a document from a cloud service, how difficult is it to request that document get restored? How long does it take? Is that adequate for this workload? So some components some elements of service management might be a little bit more challenging to deliver on the cloud. What about information management itself? Security, permissions, and lifecycle. Look at the features that are supported on the cloud against your information management policies and decide whether they're appropriate or not. So again, what we're really focusing on here is the concept that we are taking the business needs, making tough decisions in with an understanding of what the capabilities are of the technology we're evaluating. And again, not necessarily SharePoint or Office 365 specific, this is simply good solution specification, good solution architecture. And it's one of the weak spots in organizations. So this is the final sort of framework here. This is a process I go through with customers to do their needs analysis, solution mapping, solution architecture, whatever you want to call it. And the takeaways from this little piece of our discussion for you are, first of all, this is not voodoo magic. There actually is a relatively straightforward process for taking business needs and figuring out if you can do it on a technology, how you can do it on a technology, and what tough decisions need to be made. Because again, people, there's going to be very rarely a situation where you have a silver bullet technology that achieves all of your needs for free. That, of course, is what the business wants, right? They want their needs delivered tomorrow for free. IT wants a service that runs itself. And no one can get everything they want. You have to make the tough decisions, understanding what the business wants, understanding what the technology can do, and then decide what you can live with and what you can live without. It's not voodoo magic. There is a process. There are specifications that come out of this process. And one of the small points about this diagram is that there's two types of specifications. There are solicited specifications. These are the things you get from the business. And then there are derived specifications that are what the technology is capable of doing and what you've decided to actually do, the tough decisions. The reason I emphasize this slight difference in types of specifications is you can't let the business come to you and say, we need an Office 365 tenancy with this many sites and this types of lists and these content types and this metadata. Because that is the architecture. That is the derived specification, not the business specification. Now, it would be great if they could come to you and say that and be right. And I can tell you from experience, as companies get more mature with SharePoint, the business actually does get better at coming and saying, this is exactly what we need. And they might be right. But you can't just let them live with that. You can't take that as the input from the business, because you have to be able to track your derived specifications back to the business need. Why do you need this type of tenancy? Why do you need these content types? Why do you need this metadata? So you have to track back each derived specification to the original input, who drove it, why it matters, the value, and how it's going to be measured. So if a business comes to you and gives you a technical specification, you can take it as long as you ask why, and they can answer it, which drives you back to the yellow boxes of business outcome, functional preferences, information management standards, and technical considerations. Another important takeaway from this is that, and this is something that if you can communicate this to your team, this will be a huge piece in creating a center of excellence that is governed correctly and delivers high quality service. And that is that this is a system, meaning each of these boxes is interdependent. And put another way, no one audience can get everything at once. When I'm working in very big customers, each of these boxes is actually owned by a completely different part of the organization. There's the business customer that wants to do something, that's the upper left box. There's librarians who manage information architecture, that's the upper right box. There's people who run the servers, that's the lower right box. There's SharePoint, there's security in the middle, that's sort of the middle tier of information management standards. Legal is on the far left doing information management standards. Project management is on the bottom doing project. And everyone only cares about their one little piece of the picture. And the idea is no one can get everything they want. But they have to understand that if they ask for this, there's cost, benefit, and risk because of what the technology can or can't do to support that requirement. And I'll give you a couple of examples here, which is, let's say that we've gone through this process and we've decided exactly how we're going to deliver this workload on Office 365. And then the HR organization, the business, says, oh, this is looking great. Let's also do a vacation tracking time and a sick leave tracking system. So they come to us with an entirely new set of business outcomes. Because this is a system, the rule is you can't change one box without changing others. So new business outcomes mean you have to go through the process again, look at the new information classes, the new policies, the new service management requirements, the architecture and the alignment with the technology. You have to go through a spin cycle. And that itself isn't necessarily bad, as long as you have the time and money on the bottom to do that. So someone's going to have to give. Either project management has to say, you've got more time and more money, go for it. Or the business is going to have to say, the center of excellence is going to have to say to the business, we simply can't do that. Another example would be, let's say we've figured out exactly how to deliver a specific workload, and all of a sudden the budget gets cut. And we've all had this happen. Yeah, your budget's got cut 25%. I hope you can still deliver this. And when they say hope, they mean expect. That's not possible in a system, because if you change the budget, that means there are certain things that you might not be able to do any longer. And they have to understand that, okay, if we're going to change the budget, that means we can't afford Caligo, so we can't manage content onto iPads. Therefore, we can't prevent data leaks by encrypting content on iPads. Therefore, either the technical consideration of using iPads has to be thrown out, or legal has to say it's all right to have unencrypted data on iPads. Someone's going to have to give. I can almost guarantee it won't be legal. But someone has to give. So it's a system. And if people recognize that and see which of these boxes they own and understand how they impact other boxes, then the right people can be brought to the table. And part of the goal here is that this system really focuses on the fact that you have to compromise. There's no silver bullet. You can't have it all for free tomorrow. And it gets people focused on the tough decisions and asking the right questions at the right time. And very importantly, bubbling up risk. If you go through each of these steps, you will have the information you need to make the right decision. And I already talked about the idea of what happens if your business won't tell you how to manage resumes. They won't tell you what the standard is. There's either someone doesn't know or someone won't take the time. This process says you have to have that policy. If you don't, there's a risk associated with it. And the risk can then be bubbled up. You can say this is the class of risk. This is how much it will cost if we get sued, for example. This is the probability. And then the business will, then that risk gets passed up to someone who really will care. One of the most effective ways to get a technology implemented correctly is not to focus on the benefits, but to focus on the risk of not doing it right. Because here's the reality of business. Our managers are being judged on whether we do what we're supposed to do on time and under budget. They don't care what risks we're taking. They just care that it gets done, right? And that's okay, that's the reality. If we say we don't have the right information to do it without this risk, and we bubble that risk up, it's a hot potato. And they're going to look at that and go, oh, I can't make that decision. And it will get bubbled up even more. And it will bounce to the right place. It will bounce into legal's lap to make a decision and to make a business call. It'll bounce into executive. It'll bounce into ownership or stock or shareholders or whatever. But at some level of an organization, there's always someone who cares about risk and will make the decision. And risk isn't bad. You can accept risk. There's levels of acceptable risk. But you have to get it into the hands of the person who can decide whether it's an acceptable risk or not. And I've been in plenty of organizations where the budget for SharePoint was tight until it was really clarified the level of mission-critical information that was going into SharePoint and the risk of what would happen if something went wrong. And all of a sudden, it wasn't IT's budget that was having to kick in the extra money. It was legal. And, you know, all of a sudden, the wallets opened up, and it was done right. So risk is a very interesting player. And you know, in the IT space, we often haven't been given a large voice at the table in the business discussion. One of the best things we can do is help our business understand risk. Because IT is just the messenger. And the idea you can't shoot the messenger, because we're just saying the reality. The reality is you're asking me to do this. The technology can only do that. Therefore, your options are, don't do what you're asking, do what you're asking and take a risk, or cough up extra money. And it becomes the business's decision to make, which is exactly who should be making the decision. The problem up till now is we haven't been giving the business the right information to make the right decisions with. And that's what Center of Excellence is about, is helping the business understand what its options really are so they can make an informed decision. So hopefully this framework will be useful for you in getting things to move. And one of the other common questions I get related to sort of aligning business with technology is how do you get the right people to the table? And this framework really does do that, because you don't necessarily need to have legal at the table for every technical discussion or even finance or HR. But when it's necessary, this framework asks the right questions and gets them to the table at the right time. So at this point now, we've asked the next we understand the very, very important question, which is why did we do it? We know why we made the choice of technology we made, why we made the choice of service, based on the business the business requirements, so to speak, the outcomes and preferences, the capabilities of the technology, and the compromises we chose to make. And we focus on the why. Now, in this process of aligning business needs with the technical capabilities of a cloud service or even on-prem service and making tough decisions, you have to know enough about the technology to make the good decision as well. And that's where, when you're newer to a technology, bring in expertise. Get the help you need, because the learning curve is something you'll only have to go through once, and the faster you can accelerate it, the better. And if you bring in external help, please make sure that you're not just asking someone to come in and do it for you. Make sure you're asking them why, and make sure you know exactly why, and make sure they went through this framework. There's a lot, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of garbage services out there that will come in and sell you what is basically a canned product and position it as this will solve your business needs. Make sure they have aligned the technical capabilities of what they're architecting with your business needs, and that you understand the risks you've assumed and the costs you're assuming along the way. The final component of the framework is portfolio management. And portfolio management is the idea that we are increasingly going to have a wide variety of services delivering different business capabilities. So we're going to have Office 365 doing certain things, on-prem SharePoint doing other things, Exchange, Link, Dropbox, Google Docs, you name it, whatever it is, we're going to have all these things delivering business services. We have to keep track of that. We need to know what our business is relying on, why those decisions were made, and how those things were built. We have to have a catalog of services. Now, the specifications that go into that catalog, that inventory, are simply what came out of this. What were we trying to do? What could the technology do at the time we made the decisions? And what compromises did we make? If we understand that and start just simply tracking it, that will allow us to then start monitoring the capabilities that we're delivering and making sure that they match what the specifications that were part of the process. So are we achieving our goal? And one of two things happen when you evaluate a service. Well, actually, one of three. One is it's working as intended. That's actually not as common. The second is we are failing. We're not delivering what we expected. And that's an obvious one. The third is the most interesting, which is we built a service to do X. It not only did X, but users are now doing Y and Z with it. And that is really important to keep tabs on, because it can cause really crazy and unfortunate problems. I was working with a government agency in the Netherlands that had deployed SharePoint for a very specific workload that was supposed to be 80 users and 300 gigabytes of content. And I was brought in 2 years later when the service had melted down. And when we looked at it, it was 500 users and 3 terabytes of content on a platform that was simply not built to support that. No wonder it had melted down. Now, the question is, why didn't they notice that several hundred users ago? Because they weren't monitoring. And of course, when it fails, it becomes SharePoint's fault and Office 365's fault and the technology's fault. It isn't the business that didn't do things right. It was the technology's fault. And so that particular problem is something you've got to watch out for, particularly with Office 365 and SharePoint, because it is such a powerful and empowering platform that business will start doing really interesting things with. That's actually one of Microsoft's main problems. They built this product to do a very specific set of collaboration, and then the world just exploded with it and started building all these full trust solutions and jamming it onto the product. And then they're like, oh my God, we can't support that. We need to get it off. And they're having to respond to the fact that the market started doing things with SharePoint that they didn't really honestly anticipate. And so we have to watch for that in our own services as well. And if the service we're delivering doesn't meet the specifications, we have to have a trigger that reevaluates and goes through that process we talked about a few moments ago to figure out what needs to be modified in that process. And portfolio management matters because we want to make sure we're succeeding in delivering the services and objectives that we set, because business and technology evolve. So we might have built a service, but then while that service has been living, the business needs actually changed a little bit, or the technology changed a little bit, and we need to be able to spot that and realign. And then, of course, the most important part about this is that technology doesn't stand still, and the business comes to us with new demands every day. And the only way we can go from those yellow to green boxes in that previous flow is to be able to look at a workload and say, can we do it in our existing environment? Is it feasible? And in order to know whether it's feasible and how it will impact our existing environment, we have to know what our existing environment is. So we need to be able to respond to both business and technical requests, the only way to do that is to know what we've got in place. And that portfolio management is severely lacking in most organizations, because for decades, we've had these monolithic platforms. We had 5 or 6 major platforms, Office, Exchange, SharePoint, Lotus Notes, whatever it was, that was sort of it. And now we've got all these services that are exploding. They need to be treated more granularly. We've got to get portfolio management in place. So with those four components, being able to define business needs effectively, that's a business analyst sort of role, a feasibility, a green lighting process, and really knowing what we can do already and what the risks and costs are of moving forward, being able to align technology with business needs and make tough decisions, that's a solution specification, and then keep track of what we've done, this is the framework for doing IT excellently. And what the framework forces is you asking all the right questions. What are we doing? How do we do it? What should we do? Why did we do that? Did we do it? That's the measurement and metrics part. And what have we done? because now we're being asked to do something else, and we need to know what we've done. And I'd like to sort of, from a theoretical perspective, say that in the end, the right decision actually doesn't matter. The question isn't, is it the right decision? Because that can only be answered in the future, in the time. And what really matters is making the decision the right way. If you make the decision the right way, you then know enough about why you made the decision that later on you can reevaluate whether it was the right decision or not without the political and ego impact of being told, wow, that broke. If you made the right decisions, you knew the risks you were taking, at least most of the time. And you're able to say, yes, we knew that there was this risk, and we all decided to accept that risk because of X, and sure enough, X happened. So that's just sort of a slight business change. And because of that, at this audience, that's sort of the executive and leadership role, we need to focus moving forward on not rewarding the choice, but on rewarding the justification. In other words, it doesn't matter why you chose to use Documentum in 2006 and the fact that now it's costing us millions of dollars in support costs and we really should be using SharePoint. It wasn't the choice that mattered. It was the justification. Because back then, we looked at our business needs, we looked at the technologies that were out there, and that was the right choice. The justification was correct at the time. Sure, now we might be regretting it, but that's because things changed. And it's not that you were a bad person and made the wrong decision. It's you made the decision the right way, just things have changed. And if IT becomes more agile that way, that will really, really seriously help. So from a takeaway perspective, establish this framework for excellence, the four components that I suggested. Ask the right questions and reward the process. Get people invested in knowing why decisions were made, because the odds are those decisions are going to have to be changed. Technology is moving way too fast. Business is moving way too fast. And the only way to adapt is to be able to know why we made the decision, look at the new options that are out there, and say, oh my gosh, Office 365, today they announced all these new things. So that decision we made back then, now it's better on Office 365. And to be able to recognize that and move forward in an agile way. So we've talked about analysis. I've given you a little bit of guidance. Now let me share with you some of the specific discussion that I have with leadership and some of the common questions that I get as a consultant. The first of which is, and there's a little bit of overlap here, by the way, with my last session. So when some of you were there, there'll be slight little overlaps here. But it's really focused on strategic issues here. Should I migrate to the cloud? My general advice is don't migrate. Instead, move forward. And what I mean by that is look at workloads. Look at what your business is asking you to do. And when they ask you to do something new that either increases value or decreases risk, that's when you go through the processes we've discussed, evaluate your technologies, look at your cloud services, look at their technical capabilities against your business needs, and make some tough decisions. And if that cloud service is the right way to do that new workload, then by all means, deliver that new workload on that cloud service. So we're not talking about a migration or an upgrade, we're really talking about a workload-based evolution where each new request from the business is evaluated against feasibility and suitability and technical capabilities to decide where it belongs. Can we do it? Should we do it? Where should we do it? How should we do it? And that means no big migration projects. Big migration projects generally decrease value and increase risk and increase disruption in the organization. I shared a quote in the previous session from a CIO of a major financial services organization, which is big upgrade projects provide little or no value. They looked at their history of migrations, and just purely migrating for the sake of migrating was never worth it for them. And so they decided it's better for us to have a legacy platform doing all the things it does, maintain that investment, and do new things where they really belong to be. And eventually that legacy platform can be evaluated and perhaps migrated. So don't migrate. Move forward with an understanding of what your business is asking you to do that increases value and decreases risk. And then over time, sure, you will migrate, but not just because. You'll migrate because something increases value when you migrate it. One of those old workloads on the old system suddenly will benefit from a new feature that's just been announced in Office 365. Now it's worth migrating. Or maybe you'll decrease risk in an existing workload. You've got something in an old platform, and by moving it to Office 365, you can decrease data exposure or decrease risk because Microsoft won't or your old vendor won't support what you had in place. So over time, there will be reasons to migrate, but you're not migrating for technical reasons. You're not migrating for platform reasons. You're migrating because of business value or business risk. So when should I begin to migrate? And my advice is don't wait because your business isn't going to wait. We see that all the time. Your business may come to you with a need that really only can be delivered on the cloud or only can be delivered in an affordable, manageable way in the cloud. And you don't want to get caught off guard. So I'm talking to a lot of customers about this right now, which is get your Office 365 tenancy going. Figure out what it's going to take. Even if you don't use it now, figure out what you're going to need to do on-premise in order to migrate to the cloud, for example, cleaning up your Active Directory and doing some of those kinds of things. Get the billing and figure out the licensing for Office 365. Get it in place so that when your business does come to you with a workload that you can't support with your existing technologies, your answer won't be no. Your answer will be, oh, yes, we can do that. You'll be the first one to go into Office 365. And they will love you for that because their assumption is there's an app for that. Now, which cloud should you use? Well, this is a SharePoint event, but Office 365 is getting a lot of attention, but it is important to realize you've got several different flavors of cloud. And again, small bit of repeat here from the previous session, but you've got the software as a service model, which is Office 365. You've got infrastructure as a service models, building your data center in the cloud. That's what Azure VMs are for example. Amazing technology. I mean, I am such a fan of what they're doing in Azure, and particularly Azure VMs as an IT pro history. I love that stuff. Managed infrastructure as a service, where you have a vendor maintaining your data center for you, and they're running on-premise versions of the product, but they're giving you a cloud service. And then last but not least, of course, on-premise. And as I did say in the last session, I think vocabulary is very, very important in an organization. The way you talk about things frames your perspective, your objective, your values, and the way you behave. And so I would like to ask you, when you go back to your organizations and you're hearing and participating and leading discussions, try to get people to stop saying on-premise and start saying private cloud. What are you doing on-premise to deliver the same kinds of values that are available in the cloud? Responsiveness, elasticity of capacity, maybe better billing, that the business actually starts paying for things rather than IT paying for everything. Figure out what the benefits are of the cloud and how you can deliver those on-premise and start thinking about your own internal service as a private cloud. Now, the other thing to think about in this question of which cloud should I use is that, again, it's workload-based. There's no silver bullet. There's no one cloud. There's no one cloud service. There's no one software application that will do everything you need. So you need to align the workloads with the capabilities of the clouds. On-premise, obviously, you've got a wide variety of features to use on SharePoint. But on-premise can't do everything. On-premise cannot share with external users very easily without you punching holes in your firewall and adding accounts to Active Directory and blah, blah, blah. Office 365 does that very well. So the extranet workload, in many cases, is much better to support on Office 365. Team sites, basic collaboration, sort of standard vanilla collaboration, put in Office 365 because it's easy to maintain. You're not having to worry about backup and restore. It's highly available. It's performant. It works across devices. Social, obviously, with Yammer in the cloud, there's a great story, and we're seeing a lot more about that. And user-driven solutions, which is things that put together pieces that you don't yet have on-premise. I mentioned in the last session, the site mailbox is this really cool new feature in 2013 where a team can have its own inbox. It appears on the team site. It also then gets automatically pumped into everyone's Outlook. So you not only have your inbox, but you have your team inbox. And it allows you to take documents from the document libraries on the team site and have them stored in Outlook. Really, really cool. On-premise, you'd have to have Exchange 2013 and SharePoint 2013 to make that happen. If you're not at that point, put them in Office 365. Bam, they got it. Software as a service also is not just the multi-tenant flavor of SharePoint that Microsoft is pushing really hard at this event. There's also the dedicated versions of Office 365. They don't get a lot of love from Microsoft in sort of a public marketing perspective, but there are a number of customers who have the dedicated flavor of Office 365. It's a different service, but it's still Microsoft's cloud. It's a little bit closer to the full range of capabilities of SharePoint, but there are still serious restrictions around full trust solutions and some other things. One of the core points I wanted to make at this moment, though, is that there are flavors of Office 365 that are specific for certain types of organizations. There's Office 365 for government, which gets pretty good press. There's Office 365 for education. But there's also, for example, Office 365 for ITAR. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with what ITAR is a set of regulations about export-controlled information. A lot of defense contractors have to worry about ITAR data and what is kept in certain containers and how it's dealt with as it gets distributed. Microsoft has Office 365D for ITAR. And I have defense contractors, for example, who are looking at that technology because it meets their business needs. But it doesn't get a lot of press. So if you hadn't heard about it, in fact, I know quite a few Microsoft consultants who don't even really know that it's there. You need to ask, and you need to ask lots of people and say, how do I meet my needs? Also, as Microsoft evolves, they're going to get better and better at delivering specific types of workloads on their own service. So you'll see, I'm imagining, more and more support for specific HIPAA environments, specific financial services environments, specific extraction industry environments, and government and other things. So the technology is moving fast enough that you want to keep track of the different flavors of cloud that are out there. And last but not least, there are certain workloads that belong on infrastructure as a service. Right now, for example, if you were going to do a public-facing website on SharePoint, I would very highly encourage you to do it on an Azure VM. It really kind of is very rudimentary in Office 365. There's a lot of management that you have to worry about if you're going to do it on-prem. Azure makes great sense. And there are some other workloads that are good for that infrastructure as a service model. And this is the slide Microsoft probably wouldn't want me to show, but the main point here is, there's other clouds besides Microsoft's. You've got Office 365, you've got Azure, but there's also this small little thing called Amazon Web Services, which is gigantic, obviously. There's Google, and then there's partners of Microsoft like Rackspace and FP Web that deliver Windows solutions in the cloud. And then there's completely separate platforms like Dropbox. We need to keep in mind that it's not about a specific technology, it's about meeting our business needs. And so, very important, don't drink the Kool-Aid. Don't drink Microsoft's Kool-Aid here. Don't drink the analyst's Kool-Aid, because they have their own agendas as well. Make your own decisions about what matters. It's very important to remember you've got the choice here. The choice will be easier if you accept that where the world is going is a very diverse set of technical services that you offer business solutions on, rather than thinking, what is our one platform that we're going to commit to? That world is gone right now, and I don't imagine it's going to come back. So realize you've got a choice and prepare to enjoy the fact that you've got a choice. And so what you end up with, you know, as I'm sort of presenting this, is a very hybrid environment. Again, the technology doesn't matter. What matters are the services and solutions and applications you're giving to a business. You think about how you align those most effectively with software as a service, infrastructure as a service, private cloud, which providers you use, which software you use, which platform you use. And that's the new model. It's less technically focused, more business focused. Now, how do you plan effectively in this new world? And the bad news here is long-term planning is dead. And I work with very big organizations. They do 5-year and 7-year plans. That's their culture. It is a waste of time in IT these days. There is no way that you can effectively create a 5-year plan and commit to a product timeline for more than probably 18 months in the future. It just simply is folly. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to be asked to do it, but it's folly. And one of the things you can bubble up is the risk of taking your time away from actually delivering solutions to do a 5-year plan that simply everyone realizes isn't going to work. What's the risk of that? What is the opportunity cost? But long-term planning really is dead. So really focus on strategizing where your business is going, how you're going to innovate, and how you're going to respond to the business. That's the kind of thing you want to think about. What processes and mechanisms can you put in place to be more adaptive, more agile as an organization? Now, while long-term planning is dead, and you certainly can't commit to any one platform right now, I must say, Microsoft's history and trajectory really do make it a best bet. Now, SharePoint and Office 365, you know, they're not the most established service. Office 365 in its current form is, just a year old? It was released at the end of February of 2012. Office 365 itself was summer of 2011. There have been other cloud services around longer. And this is true across all of Microsoft's technologies. They're not always the first to the game. But their trajectory is ridiculous. What they're investing in this and the progress they're making and the commitments they're putting down and their execution in most cases is, from sort of an analyst perspective, really quite astounding. They are in it to win it, and they have no other option. This is the way they're going. And I really think that it's only a matter of time before there is very little question as to whether Office 365 and or Azure are the only reasonable way to deliver workloads on Windows-based services, on Microsoft-based services. Right now, there's some others, but it's going to be real hard for them to keep up with what Microsoft is doing. Is this all enterprise ready? Well, no, it's not. But nothing ever is, because enterprise needs constantly change, and we're constantly asking for more. But Microsoft has a track record. We can see what they've done in the past. They've built amazingly scalable services. Outlook.com, which used to be Hotmail, Bing, Skype, Yammer now, BPOS, which became Office 365. All of these services are incredibly robust. They've had a great track record. And as we're seeing more and more, their pace of innovation is really nothing short of astounding. One of the executives mentioned this in the keynote this morning, but I want to emphasize this. Microsoft spent several years building this infrastructure of these clouds, of Azure and Office 365 particularly. That took a ridiculous amount of investment of engineering talent and business talent to make all the business models work. Those clouds are now basically in place. And now what's happening is all that talent that was working on stuff we didn't ever see is now releasing functionality. And we're going to start seeing the kinds of things we saw this morning at a pace that is just going to make everyone else go, wow. So that's what Microsoft can do when they're no longer held back by antitrust and they're not building these gigantic global clouds. I really, truly think that it's definitely a company worth betting on. But you need to make sure it aligns with your business requirements. So if you think, you know, the cloud isn't good enough, you know, you might be right, as long as you've thought about the requirements and the alignment of technology. But for another workload, it might be perfectly right. I think there's very few organizations that can't benefit from the cloud for at least some of their workloads today. And over time, obviously more and more. One of the other challenges I see in companies is that they say, well, SharePoint on-premise is this, and we can't do that in the cloud. You know, again, that might be true, but SharePoint Online is different. And I encourage you to not think, how do we take everything on-prem and map it into the cloud? Instead, think about what can't we do on-prem that the business is either going to go use Dropbox or Google Docs or something that we actually manage that integrates really well with what we've got on-premise, like Office 365. It's almost unfortunate that it's called SharePoint Online and SharePoint On-Prem because the workloads that people are putting in those two environments are really often a little bit different. And it's almost better if you think about them as two completely separate options, so you look at a workload and align it with each of those to decide which one is a more adequate fit for that workload. So okay, maybe it's time to start moving to the cloud, Dan. Maybe I've helped convince you a little bit. How do you move to the cloud? Well, first of all, don't create your own pain. You're not going to move to the cloud right away. So spend some time preparing for a hybrid world. That is, I think, and all of us realize that, that's the reality of today, is it's going to be a hybrid world for the near future where some workloads will belong on-premise for the foreseeable future. How are you going to manage that? How are you going to connect people? How are you going to manage identities? How are you going to manage information and user experience? Think about how you're going to architect customizations. Obviously, the app model is Microsoft's approach towards that. Prepare for the hybrid world now so that you're not artificially forced into a position where you're going to the business and saying, all we have is this one platform, and it either can do it or it can't. You need to be ready for this hybrid world. Architect what you can for the cloud today. If you have a choice between building something as a full trust solution and building it as an app, build it as an app for sure. But also recognize that not everything can be built as an app today. Know why you built it as a full trust solution, so that when the app model changes just enough that that reason doesn't exist anymore, you can move it into the app model. As you're looking at architecting your service of SharePoint, if you're doing stuff on-premise, ask yourself, what can we do on-premise that won't hurt us later or that will help us migrate to the cloud later? An example, if you're going to do a lot of code-based customization and full trust solutions and those kinds of things, that creates what I would call a dirty environment that isn't going to be easy to move to the cloud. Put that in a separate container than your clean environment that is using team sites with all out-of-box functionality. That might be its own site collection, its own web app, maybe it's even its own farm. That then you can say, this is a good, clean environment with lots of out-of-box that sooner rather than later, we're going to be able to migrate to the cloud, whereas this part has these solutions that for these reasons we had to create customizations, and over time you figure out whether those are now adequate to be moved up to the cloud. So over time, you can move things to the cloud, but it's not going to be an immediate thing. And it's also, for sure, isn't going to be easy. Don't assume it's going to be easy. Make sure you plan and test and repeat and enforce that with your teams, because what you'll also find is that it's also not an all-in-one solution. There are going to be things that SharePoint doesn't do that you wish it would do, or that Office 365 won't do. And you need to be able to identify those things and go back to the business and say, okay, out of box, we can't do this, but with some extra cost, maybe with a third-party tool, we can, or we can live without it and let the business make those decisions. So know what SharePoint can't do out of the box, know the gaps, know the third-party tools. In my last session, I mentioned this as well, which is spend some time on the expo floor, even if you don't think you're going to buy a third-party tool. Because only by going to the expo floor will you know what SharePoint can't do. Because if SharePoint could do it, chances are they wouldn't be making money on the expo floor. So knowing what those companies do is the best way to know what SharePoint doesn't do right now. And it's a good way to tune into that stuff. So that then leads us to a final set of observations about concerns about the cloud. Now, I know Rob Lemire did a session prior to mine. I was doing a session in the same time slot, so I didn't get to see it. But he covered a lot of these things about the general concerns that organizations raise and objections about the cloud. The cloud isn't flexible. We can't build all the customizations that we're used to building. It doesn't seem as secure as our on-prem environment. We're concerned about data sovereignty and data leaving the borders of our country. We're concerned about losing data. Now, those are very typical concerns, and I know Rob spent a lot of time addressing them. I'd like to share a couple of stories with you in these dimensions that sort of illustrate the fact that while there are always valid concerns, these are all valid, they're not valid in every situation. And it's a matter of opening up your perspectives and understanding what your business is really trying to achieve. Sometimes it's a matter of difficult questions and choices and scope of perspective. Now, let me give you an example of what I mean by that. I was in New Zealand last year and was talking with a number of the players in the legal community down there in Christchurch. And they told me how there was this sort of general culture that, oh, you would never put anything in the cloud because client data would get compromised. There was this concern about security and data loss. No way are we going to put it in the cloud. We just have our on-premise environments. We back it up to this off-site facility that's 5 miles away. Life is great. And then there was this very unfortunate magnitude 8 earthquake that wiped out all of Christchurch and the off-site backups. And those law firms lost their data. They were so concerned about a narrow scope of risk that they didn't see the broader scope of risk, and therefore they made a technical decision. And simply by opening the scope and understanding some of the tougher choices, it became a little bit more interesting. We see the same thing with a lot of security discussions where you say, okay, there's this concern about security in the cloud, but then you look at the cost of doing it internally, and it's perhaps even greater. So an example of this is, over the past 2 years, I've seen more than just a few clients come to me and say, we are moving our most sensitive data to Office 365. Now, the first time I heard that, it just about made me pass out. I was like, what? But then what they described makes a lot of sense, which is, it's more than about permissions these days. Dan might have read permission to a document, but what we really need to control is that Dan doesn't use that permission to print the document out and mail it to someone or forward it in an email to someone. We need to control the tasks that Dan performs with his information. And that means we need more than just security and permissions. We need rights management. Now, rights management can be done on-premise, but it's complicated. You need a PKI, a certificate infrastructure. You need all the right client applications, blah, blah, blah. Out of the box in Office 365, you've got rights management in the E4 plan. And so their decision was, it's better for us to move our sensitive data into the cloud because it can do things security-wise that we simply won't be able to do on-premise for 2 more years. And then maybe we'll move it on-premise once we get our rights management on-premise. My guess is they never will, because the cloud will meet their needs. A lot of it, obviously, is reality versus perception, mythology, and hype. There is a lot of misinformation out there. Again, in the same New Zealand discussion, there was a couple of people who raised points basically saying, well, we're not allowed to host this in Office 365 because the data center is in Singapore, and we're not allowed to let this information go out of the country. There was actually someone from the government there, and that person said, actually, there is no law about that. It was just simply misperception. Now, there are, in some places, laws about certain classes of information, but even in Germany, which is often brought up as the ultimate case study, the actual law about what you can and can't let leave the borders is very granular and specific. And even then, what you start seeing is multinational organizations deciding that the business cost of adhering to those laws is so high that they're going to take the risk and they're going to manage that risk. And certainly they do some very interesting things to do that, but they work around it. It's a matter of expanding their scope of perception. Rapid evolution is another really big thing where the technology is changing so quickly that a decision you made 6 months ago is simply no longer accurate. A data sovereignty example, again, I was working with a customer that basically said, well, we're not going to do this until Microsoft has a data center in our country. Literally the next month, Microsoft announced they were building a data center in their country, and it changed their technology choice. And I think, honestly, one of the biggest concerns about the cloud is job loss. People are concerned about what it's going to do to them. And there's a fascinating story of a CIO of a major organization who asked her consultant to poison pill their on-premise Exchange environment. She literally said, what can I do to my Exchange environment so that it can never be migrated to the cloud? And it was because she really thought her Exchange team was the bomb. She loved them. She didn't want them to lose their jobs. She actually asked that. And I mean, that's a really sort of extreme example. But in the end, I think a lot of it is just our own concern about how this impacts us and our teams. As I mentioned before, I think this is one of the most awesome times to be in IT because now we get to play with all these different pieces and put them together and solve problems, which in the end is what most IT people, most technical people want to do is solve problems and play with cool toys. And we've been sort of relegated to plumbing and electricity and utility delivery for the last 6 years. And that's changing. Now, I know for sure that this is not easy. I mean, I spend time in large organizations. I know none of this is easy, but it is simple. The pieces that need to be put in place are simple, and it takes time and enculturation and leadership to make it happen. And it can happen. So to wrap up some of the sort of takeaways of this and what we need to do as leaders in organizations, we need to make sure our organization understands the impact of the cloud and why we have to really begin to transform IT. We have to establish a framework for excellence that asks the right questions and rewards the process, not the final decision. We need to stop asking for a silver bullet and help our business understand there's no one technology that gives you everything you want for free today and that there's tough choices that have to be made along the way. We need to not drink the Kool-Aid that we're being fed by any one cloud vendor or by analysts and realize we've got a choice in the process. We need to not even bother trying to plan specific technical platforms for the long term because it's folly, but rather understand the ecosystem of what's out there today and watch it and understand how the pieces can be put together to solve our problems. Understand trajectories and convergence. Understand where Microsoft and other cloud providers are going, where technologies are coming together so that you can say, you know what, I'm not going to make this decision about how we solve this problem today because I can see that in 3 months, or Microsoft has announced that in 3 months, they're going to have this solution. Let's wait and do it then rather than invest a whole lot of money right now. Don't wait, start now. Most of us have, but really get serious about establishing, for example, an Office 365 tenancy, figuring out how to synchronize your identities to the cloud. Get those fundamentals done, even if today you're not delivering a workload on the cloud. Have it there so that when your business comes to you, you can respond. And as part of that, you're going to need to plan for and architect a hybrid environment. On-premise cloud, different versions of SharePoint, different services, and move forward with a workload-centric migration rather than a big upgrade project. Plan, test, repeat. And I guess the last thing I would say is let's stop using the word the cloud as if it's one thing. The cloud is simply a big shopping shelf of tools that we can pick to deliver specific workloads. And the answer is the cloud is not right, and the cloud is right for what we're trying to do. So we need to break it down and really start thinking about the workloads and the specific services that will solve our problems. Because in the end, the cloud doesn't matter. Office 365 doesn't matter. SharePoint doesn't matter. And IT doesn't matter. Business matters. And IT is going to matter when we increase value, decrease risk for our business. And because IT matters, we need to really connect IT back to the business, reimagine its role, transform it. That's what this event is all about. And we need to become a service inside our organizations. Because if we don't, we will lose to the services that are outside our organizations. They will always be cheaper and faster unless we become cheaper and faster ourselves. IT needs to be put in the middle, become a center of excellence that delivers service at a reasonable cost, or at least manages and helps the business understand costs and make decisions, understand risk and control and how to make those decisions, and become the agile partner that our business has been wanting for the last 8 years and that we couldn't do because we had financial constraints and recessions and Windows Vista and all kinds of problems. We need to become innovation technology. And I really want to spend some time answering questions, but I know we're actually at the end of our time, so I will stay up here and answer any questions you've got. I'll be around the event regularly. I would also really like to encourage you guys on Wednesday afternoon to take advantage of the executive roundtables. If you haven't had time to look at Wednesday yet, these are literally roundtables, just like we were eating at lunch with 10 people, and centered around topics for the first two time slots, and then regions and industry verticals on the third time slot, so you can talk with each other. Because it's great that, you know, Microsoft puts me up on stage and has me talk at you for an hour and a half, but what really matters is you guys connecting with each other and finding out what other peers are doing and getting their insight and their experience. So please take advantage of the time to ask me questions after the sessions, but even more importantly, to ask each other questions. I'll leave my contact information up here. Please don't hesitate to reach out to me. I'm more than happy to do whatever I can to help you be successful with SharePoint. Enjoy the rest of the SharePoint conference. Please do fill in your evals, and I'll look forward to seeing you over the rest of the event. And if you have questions, come on up. Thanks a lot.